Pickaxe.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long-forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season, or arc, has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you around the table.
Hello and welcome back to The Review of Death, a Doctor Who podcast, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews, featuring myself, Matthew Toffler, and always... Billy Garrett John.
Hello. You have got the intro down perfectly now.
That was good, wasn't it?
It was really good.
I was trying not to grin.
I think we should try and get a compilation together of all the times you
cocked it up.
Yeah,
oh, they all exist. Well, I've saved them all.
Well, we'll get them all to you at some point, folks. Hope you're all doing well after Storm Eunice sort of kind of didn't, but in parts, batter the country.
Yeah, we were all right. Like, we were in the central zone, and we kind of missed it.
We were on a red alert until maybe, I think, midday.
Yeah.
And then we went into amber, and then London went into red.
Yeah.
And hilariously, I'd spoken to somebody on the phone the other day going, they're on the news already talking about, oh no, poor London, look, there's footage of people shuttering all their businesses in London.
Yeah.
But like, it's going to get really bad here. Like, they've not been forecast anything. And then that changed very quickly.
It did change very quickly.
And then the Millennium Dome got stripped.
It was.
And it was nice to hear people calling it the Dome.
Yeah.
Rather than the O2. Mm. Like, that was quite gratifying.
Yeah. Did you see the planes coming in?
I watched Big Jets TV, whatever it was called.
We were having a production meeting at the time. And someone was like, have you been watching the plane? So at the end of the meeting, we were just watching this plane land. It was pretty good.
My favourite bit was every time somebody from the press would try and speak to him.
Yeah.
Like, people were in it and saying, we're from Channel 4 News. Oh, yeah? Can we come and talk to you? Yeah, I don't know how you're going to do that. Because he's, like, in a fenced-off area and stuff, and they're all running up. And it's just... It was so cool. It was really nice to see, like, a YouTube channel getting...
Yeah, all those views.
Double the views of a lot of, like, digital channels at that time of the day.
I hope he had his ad revenue running.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did.
Apparently, all the people on the plane, though, it was really appalling to hear about the aftermath. People being sick and...
My favourite part of it was people tweeting the video that he was filming at Heathrow saying, my nana and my mum were on this on the way back from Benidorm. And it's going like that. And he's saying, oh my God, it must have been awful in there for him.
Apparently it was horrendous. It was, you know, people being sick. Oh. Everyone was crying. Kids were saying, are we going to die? You know, fuck. What on earth were they doing flying?
It was stressful enough watching it come in.
Yeah.
But if you'd imagine, somebody rolled a window down as it went past the camera, it's just screaming.
Oh my God.
Well...
Talking of screaming,
that would have been a nice way of going into time flight, but sadly, we're not doing that today. We will get around to it at some point, but
oh my God.
Maybe we should do Earthshock Time Flight as a double bill.
It would have
to be Androzani and Time Flight.
Yes, it would, wouldn't it? Yeah.
That would be good.
That would be good.
We'll do that at some point.
So news.
Yes.
We actually got quite a bit of news this week.
I do worry about doing this with like a fortnight or a week before it goes out, because the Doctor could get announced at any point.
Shit, that's very true, but...
It's just something we have to live with now.
This is news as of recording on the 22nd of February. Yeah.
On 22022.
So we've got an air date, potentially, for Legend of the Sea Devils.
Yes.
17th of April, which is Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
You won't be here.
I won't be here.
You silly boy.
I should be in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're at a wedding and it's on, you just have to go...
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You're crying at a wee sea level on my face. It's so beautiful.
So we got that to look forward to. Very exciting.
Hell yeah.
Interesting. So this all came from Gallifrey One, the convention in America.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Strevens was there. So he mentioned... I don't know if he mentioned the air date, but he did say that Legend of the Sea Devils was meant to be Jodie Whittaker's last story.
Was it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is really cool. Like, the Sea Devils come back, one of the most wanted monsters to return, and they would have finished her off in some way.
How strange to think, well, why is he talking about that? Everybody needs to get down to Gallifrey One. That's the only place you hear any news about the TV show that you watch anymore.
I guess he just thought, bollocks, you know, I'm not employed by the BBC on Doctor Who anymore. So there you go. Say what we want.
So interesting. So a lot of stuff changed then, because then, unless the order of the episodes, the way they were going to go out, changed round.
Yeah.
And so the one with the Master in it was going to be first.
Yeah.
And then, but that seems a bit weird.
It would have been a bit weird, yeah. So how strange.
Where did this other special come from? Unless the special was commissioned singularly, and they were always going to do two specials, and that was it. And then they commissioned a third special.
I wonder if what is now the centenary was the finale, and then they were like, we're going to give you a centenary because we want to talk to you. And they were like, oh, well, we'll leave that. We'll quickly
to the end.
What can we quickly do
with
a small cast?
Yeah.
We'll bring the Sea Devils back.
Be interesting to see if there's any markings of it in it, of having been Jodie's last
one. We'll have to keep an eye out for
that. He spoke about Thasmin as well, didn't he?
Spoke about Thasmin. He said more Thasmin to come.
And that it wasn't, which people have been crying about, initially planned or something.
Why are people getting upset about this?
Because I just don't think that they can understand that if two actors have a certain level of chemistry and are playing those roles, and they think it's right for that character, that they can kind of go, I think maybe that we should develop something between these two characters.
Yeah. I mean, it's like so many of the finales and stuff that we've had by Russell and Stephen, you know, some of that was just like, oh, this wasn't planned.
No.
It's just like, oh, one day I got out the bath and was like, actually, you know, that would be quite a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the finale.
If you read The Writer's Tale, you'd find out that most of Russell's great ideas come from when he's walking around, like, Cardiff Bay.
Yeah.
Off his tits on whatever and drunk, stumbling around after coming out of a club.
Yeah.
And having a forlorn cigarette on Cardiff Bay. That's where most of his ideas appear to come from. So the fact that two actors who are playing the role and know those characters have gone, can we do this story?
Mm.
Why is everyone cacking themselves over it?
Yeah, like I read a thing and Mandip Gill said, oh, she didn't even know that the Thasmin stuff was going to be addressed until she got the script for Eva the Darling.
Right.
So it was as much as a surprise for her. But I think her and Jodie had obviously probably had conversations about it, and probably with Chris as well. Sort of thought, oh, you know,
maybe
there's something going on here.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Yaz does love the Doctor and whatever.
That seems way more like organic
to
me than somebody saying this is where the characters were always going to go.
Because
if they didn't have any chemistry on screen, then
that would have been really
that would have been mental. So the fact that they've come up with it surely is more.
It's better. It's better than
it being shoehorned in. I'm not saying that anytime any characters are in a relationship, it is a shoehorned thing.
No.
But, you know, it could have very easily felt like this relationship is, you know, they're platonic. They've never expressed any kind of emotions at this before.
Yeah.
Have.
Yeah.
Like, repeatedly, so.
Yeah. So, I don't see what the issue is there, but hey.
Yeah.
Other news. Yes. It's just come to mind.
Yeah.
The Sun have suggested a new Doctor Who companion.
They have.
Rosie Davies.
Yeah.
So it was Tanya. Tanya.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Billy Piper.
That's
all I bloody see on my...
Oh, yeah. Billy Piper's coming back to Doctor Who.
I love how lazy the journalism is, though.
So appalling.
I mean, we'll say this, and it will turn out to be true. But, you know, it's just Phil Collinson might be coming back. Being produced by Bad Wolf, Russell T. Davies. Well, of course, David Tennant's coming back.
Yeah.
Of course, Billy Piper's coming back.
Yeah.
And he said himself, it's very, very different
to
anything he's done before.
Yeah.
You know, Russell's been interviewed about it now, and he said,
yeah,
you know, I'm writing it. It's being written. It's very different to anything I've done before with the show.
Because he said, I'm reluctant to talk about it while Chris is still the showrunner.
Yeah.
So really, I guess as soon as the centenary happens, which I think Matt Streven said was probably due in October, not November.
Right. Okay.
So it'll be even longer between episodes of Doctor Who, between this and the 60th, unless the rumours of there being mini-series are a thing. So that'll be in October. But yeah, so after October, you know, maybe then we'll start to get a bit more info of what is to come.
Fingers crossed.
So, Tanya Reynolds, who is in Sex Education, who's really good in Sex Education. She's really good, very funny. She is apparently tipped to be the new companion.
Interesting.
Which I thought, why not?
Who was supposed to be the new doctor a couple of weeks ago?
Oh, bloody hell, it's everybody, isn't it?
Thingy from class. Faddy.
Oh yeah, him.
He was supposed to be tipped to be the new Doctor
Who. But that was apparently from Gallifrey Base. Someone put it on Gallifrey Base as a piss take, and then one of these assholes that worked right for the Sun were like, oh.
Because then it popped up. It was on this morning. Yeah. Like they had a bit where Lorraine said, "And the new Doctor Who looks a bit hunky." Yeah. And then they showed a photo of him, and it was just, oh my god.
Yeah, but he was carrying his lucky stars like, oh, I
forgot a job. No, I'm joking. That's an awful joke to make. He's a very good actor.
He's really good.
There's that.
There's that. And then, of course, we've just lost
Stuart Bevin yesterday. Yeah. It happened yesterday. Very, very sad.
I could believe it. I was shocked.
Amazing for a character in, you know, a very important story and one that is rightly praised as, you know, being a real benchmark for that era and for the show as a whole. You know, it's like, much with Blink, everything comes together perfectly.
Yeah.
You've got the perfect guest cast.
Yeah.
And he's sort of the central part of all of that. Yeah. Like, you know, the story almost revolves around Cliff in that, you know, he knows what's going on the whole time.
Yes.
It's always, you know, industrial, you know, action that he needs to take and blah, blah, blah. And he's always on the front foot in helping out the Doctor. And it's just... Yeah, really, really great character.
And, like, really nice to see that his character coming back in all of the stuff with Katie Manning.
Yeah.
Doing the trailers, because he was in, what, two trailers?
Yeah. He was in the Autumn one.
And the Green Death one. You know, he did all the On the Sofa stuff with Katie for a time.
And the stuff of them going around Bessie. Yeah.
Yeah. It really, really lovely, you know, seeing them together. Because I think they were married, weren't they, for a time?
Yeah. And they obviously maintained a very close relationship afterwards.
Yeah, really nice.
And he always seemed like a really good... He's a proper boy also, you know, he's a good lad. But it was nice to have, you know, this one who was half Welsh, to have like an elder Welsh statesman in the Doctor Who kind of family.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a shame that we never met him.
Yeah, always seemed like a really nice bloke.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I think Phantom Film said that, you know, he was like a gentleman. Like whenever he came in, it was...
It definitely seemed that way.
Yeah. Oh, bless him.
And obviously he thought of it very fondly at the time and had a massive impact on his life. So, that's all we can say. So rest in peace, Stuart Bevin.
Condolences to his family.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're doing the David Tennant double bill. This is... the highest ranked David Tennant story in the 2014 DWM of all time, everything ever poll, and the lowest ranked David Tennant story in the same poll, Love and Monsters and Blink.
Yes.
The other way around.
I thought when we obviously did the 11th Doctor one, we were like, right, okay, we'll do the lowest ranking one, which was Rings of Akaten.
Yep.
And then we were a bit particular with the top one, weren't we?
Yeah.
Because it was Day of the Doctor, then it was 11th Hour, and we were like, well, Day of the Doctor's a multi-doctor special.
And we did it live at Pandorica, which you can listen to.
And we did that, and 11th Hour, we were like, well, that's a regeneration story, that's quite particular.
Yeah.
But for this one, I'd noticed, only as I was watching it, these are both Doctor Light stories.
And the first two.
The first two,
Doctor Light stories.
Yeah.
So, do you remember being... like clued in that was going to start happening, because I seem to remember Dr. Light appearing in like the Radio Times or something.
Yes, I remember when Love and Monsters was being talked about, that was Dr. Light. And I think already as a kid I was like, because you know you're there for the Doctor, aren't you, really?
I suppose so. I mean, it does open up the scope of the show, and I think this is the thing that really, well, a couple of things really surprised me about Love and Monsters, which we'll get to, but the thing that surprised me the most about it is that it's the first time you really see the Doctor, not as a main character, and the effect he has on people that aren't the regular, you know, cast. And that's interesting. But the whole Doctor Light thing is obviously a cost-saving measure. Yeah. You would trade out one episode, make that the cheap one, and then you'd save a bit of money for the finale. So that was generally why they tend to be later... on in the run, later on in the production.
And you're not burning out your main actors.
Yeah, they can have a little bit of a break. It's totally, you know, the same thing as William Hartnell going to Sardinia for a week.
It's funny, isn't it? I was thinking that, like, how...
And that's why the Doctor's locked in prison all through that episode or whatever. That happens a lot in the 60s.
So it's like the first Doctor Light story since, I don't know, whenever Pat Troughton might have had a holiday at some point.
Yeah.
Because obviously after Pat, that just didn't happen.
Yeah, you know? the regulars just weren't. Every week. Yeah, exactly. So funny. It was just like rep. It was just like blasé. Darling, I'm awfully sorry, but I'm in the south of France that week, so I'm not going to be able to make recording it.
You just have to write me out.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, all these scripts that have been in development, and you've really tried to work on these characters, it's not going to work for me, brother. So I'm out of here.
Oh, sorry, David Whittaker. Can you come up with something? Oh, I don't know. Doctor Who has dysentery this week.
In the corner. Can you just do a little wild track of you just like squitting? Is that all right? So yeah, let's talk about Love and Monsters. Should we start with Love and Monsters?
Love and Monsters, in the Land of Love and Monsters by Lana Del Rey. No, the Land of Gods and Monsters.
I don't know. What's the Love and Monsters quote from? That must be like Shakespeare or something.
Yeah, I was going to look this up and I didn't.
So. I feel like it's Shakespeare.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
He did a lot of stuff, didn't he?
Yeah.
He came up with all the best quotes.
Yeah.
Love and Monsters. So can you remember watching this one when it came out?
I do. I get confused between this, the start of this and the start of Fear Her. Quite a lot.
I've thought after, I mean, I'm skipping way ahead, but after Love and Monsters, you get the trailer for Fear Her. I thought, crike, it really is two shit Doctor Who stories, one after the other, before a really good finale.
I would say that Fear Her is definitely worse than this, though.
Really?
Mm.
Ooh. I'm intrigued. Okay.
Well, we'll get on to it. But
right, okay.
I just got confused between the opening of Fear Her with the TARDIS landing and then having to do it the right way around, which is a great gag.
Yeah.
And Elton stumbling upon the TARDIS and then
it's
kind of starts in media res and then flashes back and all sorts of stuff like that. So
yeah, I mean, this is the one thing that I will say about Love and Monsters. I like the format of it.
I like the structure of it.
I like the framing of it. It is this guy doing a vlog before vlogs were really a thing. Like, they were in their infancy.
They really were. I mean, it's so bizarre though, because surely this is the first time somebody switched on an episode of Doctor Who that's looked like this.
Yes.
People, you know, wet themselves over Sleep No More.
Yeah.
But this really is way more of a departure from what the show had done previously than that ever was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Sleep No More, I mean, we obviously reviewed Sleep No More, but I didn't think it was as bad as this.
No.
By any means.
No, I like Sleep No More. I think that's quite an all right story. I don't get the hate towards it.
I think Sleep No More's problem is that they shot it the way that they did. I think it probably would have just worked better had it
just a normal
story.
Yeah, maybe it didn't need the gimmick. Yeah.
I think it felt like they were just like, oh, what can we do to make this one a bit more interesting? But.
Now, I think the problem with Love and Monsters that a lot of people don't like it and have ridiculed it and laughed at it, and it's been kind of the butt of jokes, and then it's sort of had an ironic sort of come around where people have gone, actually it's really good.
People do seem to like it.
And they do really like it, and I've never quite understood it. I think I got a bit closer to understanding it watching this.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying I'm part of Linda, but I'm just saying I thought it did what it was doing really well.
Yeah.
But I think one of the problems with it is that people only ever remember the really bad or really camp or really silly bits.
Yeah.
Much in the same way as, Warriors of the Deep. Like, you just remember the Murka.
Yeah, that's
true. But, like, I think that this has got more going for it than Warriors of the Deep does. I think the problem is that straight away you get the Scooby-Doo.
That, bit. I remember, I think they may have even trailed that on Totally Doctor Who.
Because I remember the Tennant bit, him poking out saying, don't I know you?
And I remember thinking, oh my God, what is this? And I'm watching it on the evening, just being like, oh dear. And even when I said to Jonathan, I was like, oh, we're doing Love and Monsters this week. He was like, oh, crikey. So not the bloody Scooby-Doo rubbish.
I tell you what, I think that it hits its lowest point there. And it's only really up from there. I think there are a couple of wobbles.
That's the absolute worst thing in the story, that bit. Yeah.
And also the fact you don't see the Hoiks as much as you ought to.
The Hoiks is a really cool monster.
Really cool looking monster.
Interestingly, only named... We only know the name because of the toy.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
I wonder what it was in the script. Scary, beastly monster.
Yeah. And maybe it was named the Hoiks. Maybe Russell named it the Hoiks.
Maybe.
And character got
saw the script. Yeah, maybe.
I agree. That is probably the worst part of it.
Yeah.
But it's a shame that it happens right at the start.
I know.
It puts a bad taste in your mouth.
But I totally agree with that. But I think that a lot of people who contend that it is the worst ever episode of Doctor Who, or it, like, when people talk about it, it's almost othered. It's like, it's it, like there's bad Doctor Who and then there's like Love and Monsters. Love and Monsters isn't even Doctor Who. Because it doesn't necessarily feel like a typical Doctor Who.
This is what I was going to say.
Because of the way that it's been structured. Yeah. And I think that the way it's structured is actually, it's fine. It's just like a normal TV soap opera.
Yeah.
You know, there's very soapy bits in it.
Yeah.
And it's just about some person's normal life. And I think that's a really daring thing for Doctor Who to have done, is to show the impact, whether positive or negative, the Doctor has on people's lives when he doesn't stick around and give them sort of aftercare of how to get over traumas and stuff, or they travel in space and time, or he shags them, or whatever.
I mean, it's kind of mad that the Doctor goes to Elton's house as a little boy.
Yeah.
His mum dies. He looks out the window and he glares at this poor child and doesn't kneel down and go, "I'm so sorry, your mum's dead."
That's the time.
What happens?
That's the time Lord Victorious looking down at him, that is.
Is it? Yeah.
That's not, "Hey, Jelly D, all's all right." You know, 10th Doctor, that's, "I'm the storm at the heart of the sun," all that kind of rubbish. Although I have to say, I quite like seeing a 10th Doctor who is not sort of, you know, weighed down by all that baggage.
Yeah.
You know, he's not doing the whole "I'm mopey and morose" for quite a lame reason.
No. I also liked seeing David Tennant's Series 2 hair before he discovered gel.
Yeah, it looks great.
It does look great.
And it's just his costume as it is.
Yeah.
Looks really good. I don't like when he starts wearing granddad shirts.
Yeah.
Because it happens at the end of Blink. Yeah. And I thought, I much prefer his look here than in other stories. Yeah. Far prefer his
it's
look
It's the
there.
Same with like Capaldi, isn't it? When they start trying to go a bit too cash with it, I think,
I don't... Well, it's the T-shirt.
Yeah.
That's egregious. And I know a lot of people like that look. And a lot of people cosplay it really well. I'm not saying that you look bad.
No.
I'm just saying, not on Doctor Who. Not for me.
No.
Although Jodie wears a T-shirt... But I suppose it doesn't look like she's been dragged through a bush backwards.
No,
that's
his
look. I get that's Capaldi's sort of thing. But
it's more uniform with the costume as it's designed, whereas Capaldi's was, this is designed to be worn with a shirt and a cardigan or a waistcoat.
If Jodie had a T-shirt that had a different design on it every week and it didn't go with the costume, then that would be the same sort of thing. But it's not really.
Yeah.
We're having an argument with invisible people that don't exist at the moment.
I don't know.
I think so.
They don't know if they're listening to this
they
on
don't,
podcast.
They don't.
Could be, you know, we could have costume designers in it.
I just kind of imagine that we've got somebody listening to us who goes, no.
Yeah.
So I feel like every time I have to go, over-explain it.
I think, that's probably anyway. Covering our asses.
Anyway, shall I tell you what was going on in the world before we dive into things?
In 2006.
So,
I know that the following week I went to a girl's birthday party, so I missed Fear.
The only time you ever went to a girl's birthday party?
Probably, yeah.
Well, there we go. I Wish I Was a Punk Rocker with Flowers in My Hair by Sandy Thorne. Remember that song?
No.
No, okay, that's fine.
How does it go?
I don't want to sing it because I embarrass myself.
Oh, okay.
No.
sorry, you're right.
And then movie. A slight stroke on the podcast. And then movies.
2006. God, I don't know. I don't know, some Marvel fair, probably.
I can't remember. Well, it was Casino Royale's year, so that might have
I was going to say Casino Royale was the year before.
No, 2006, so
was
yeah.
It? Oh, okay.
The Omen was number one.
The remake of The Omen.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
That was number one at the time. Followed the next week
It was a palindrome, wasn't it? It was because they released it on the 6th. Today of recording this is also a palindrome.
It is.
It's the 22nd of the 2nd, 2022.
And church spires have been dropping off of roofs.
Oh my God, yeah.
Shit.
Patrick Troughton is dead.
That's not funny. Followed by Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift the next week. So,
and we got Vin Diesel in the room with us.
And we've got Vin Diesel in the room with us as a cardboard cutout. Beautiful.
Yeah. Oh.
So yeah, once we've got past the Scooby-Doo corridor bit, then we start to find out a little bit more about Elton.
Yeah.
Forget the name of the guy who plays him. But Mark Warren. He's in a very good episode of Life on Mars. I think he's in a couple of episodes of that series.
Yes, he's very good.
He's very, very good.
He played Dracula as well in a BBC
Dracula. Did he? Dracula. Interesting. Dracula. So yeah, like the whole conceit of the story is obviously a kind of a survivors group. kind of gets together, Linda.
It's sort of a commentary for being a Doctor Who fan, isn't
it? Is.
You're an outcast, you're a sad git, you live in the basement, you've got no one to talk to but the people on the internet.
Exactly. And I thought that really the most obvious part of that was when he kind of meets Ursula.
Yeah.
And they have a chat and he says something like, you know about the Doctor? And they have, and she only lives like half an hour away from me or whatever. Yeah. And that was like, oh, you've met a Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
It was, that was, you know.
That was us.
Quite, it was, exactly. But, you know, that was kind of the most obvious allegory I got for it.
That was us, but not until, not all the bloody stuff with the paving stick.
We need to get into that later. There is some stuff to come onto there because the face on my other half when that scene unfolded was quite something.
I mean, I was agog watching it again. I was like, I cannot believe they put this in Doctor Who. Russell, Mandem, you naughty boy.
Face fucks a paving slab.
Yeah. Where does it... I don't know.
No.
I had a very dirty joke and I was just saying,
No.
She's got no organs, so he's going to have to go...
All right. Okay. There's quite a nice bit at the start, Matthew.
Yeah.
Where you see the Auton invasion.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You see the Slitheen ship go overhead. Yeah. You see the Sycorax ship breaking the Earth's atmosphere and shattering all the windows.
Yeah.
Pretty cool kind
it's
of moments.
Really good.
And again, a really nice, tight little reminder that this. I liked it when stuff was simple.
Yes.
I liked it when it was you had these recorded events. People know that aliens exist. They call back to the Slitheen ship, all that kind of stuff. When it starts getting into rebooting the universe so that everybody forgets and stuff, it's a bit like, because it was believable.
It was,
like those events were key in Russell's Who, and they kept being called back to.
It felt like his own little world, didn't it? In a way that Doctor Who never really felt like that before.
Yeah.
I guess the only time you ever get it is when McCoy refers back to, can you not remember the Yeti and the Zygon Gambit? But of course, that is just to go, what are you chatting about?
That's more of a gag to kind of go like, look, we're in a universe where people forget there was an alien invasion the week before. Let's just get over it, you know?
And
Or the entire universe gets bleeped, you know, like with the, was it? Men in Black thing.
Yeah.
Everybody gets their minds wiped.
Yeah.
It's one of those sort of things.
Yeah.
No one cares.
But no, it was nice. It was nice that it felt like a proper world that people lived in.
And reacted to things.
So I did like that. I'd forgotten, actually, that was part of the story. That was nice. And I imagine that we'll probably see some more of that with Russell coming back.
I hope so. I think that is quite similar as well to the stuff we see on the Tyler estate, in terms of, like, it feels real.
Yeah.
You know, and Jackie is a character that kind of lusts after a bloke in the local area.
Yeah.
And they have a little bit of a thing going on. And it's real people.
Yeah.
And it's really nice, which I think contrasting that with Blink, which we'll come on to later.
Yes.
When we, you know, it becomes more about catchphrases or it becomes more about one-liners, stinging one-liners, rather than people actually just sort of being funny because they're being natural and they're being normal and they're living their normal lives.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. And I really liked seeing Jackie again, and because Camille Couture is just
That was one of the things I put
amazing.
Down my notes. She's superb.
Yeah.
She is so well cast in that role. You could not have cast anyone else in that part. She is just Jackie Tyler perfectly. She's just ever so good. And I do like those comedy elements of the story. It works very well because, like you said, it's
part of her
character.
Why is she always trying to get her end away as well? I love it.
Don't know.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, you know, fair play to her.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I did find the chucking the wine on him a little bit like, all right, he's clearly uncomfortable. If it wasn't for him going to the bathroom afterwards and sort of getting himself ready.
Yeah, of course. Like, you would not do that in the reverse. You would not have had a man doing that.
But that's it, isn't it? But so it only makes it okay that he's up for it when he gets to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, he's being cornered. Yeah. You know, being cornered by Jackie Tyler when she's in heat would be quite something. That would be, you know, he wouldn't make out of it alive. You'd be done for. It's Michael from Alan Partridge.
Yes, what do I know him from? Alan Partridge, well done.
And you also know him as the Compare the Meerkat Meerkat.
Is he?
That's him.
Holy crap.
As Mr. Skinnerlite. He doesn't... That's what he talks like through the whole episode to me.
Yeah.
He's just, you know...
ELO,
lots of ELO. Jeff Lynne was very happy that that phone
nice
call came in.
Royalties coming
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Him. We were big ELO fans in our house.
I'm sure.
Yeah, so that was great. A bit of Mr. Blue Sky, nice.
All over the episode, doesn't stop.
Yeah.
Okay, should we talk about the other bit where it goes a little bit camp? A bit silly buggers.
What bit?
When they form a band.
Yeah.
Because that's the bit in the middle where it goes, oh no.
Yeah.
So just every now and again, it will just have a slight heart murmur and it's just drop out slightly and you'll just go, oh no, oh, you know, because honestly, everything else around it is fine and is quite charming in a lot of ways. I don't know if that's just the nostalgia of watching it again.
Yeah, I think there is an element of that. There's a sort of nostalgia to like, oh, remember these days.
Yeah. When Doctor Who could be like this.
Yeah, you know, it could never really to do that early on in its run.
That's why I really kind of got on with it, I think.
Did you? Yeah. I mean, I still wouldn't necessarily rank it particularly highly. I mean, I can't say that I hated it. I can't say that I sat there and I, you know, detested.
Foamed at the mouth.
Yeah, detested watching it. You know, I think for me, I see it almost like a spin-off episode because the Doctor's not really in it.
Yeah.
You know, it takes part in that world. You know, it's like an episode of Torchwood, but Torchwood aren't in it. You know, that's how it seems to me. It's like a spin-off.
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
But then Peter Kay walks in.
This is the thing. When he turns up, you do sort of go, oh, the spell is broken. Because it's like Peter Kay's just come into Doctor Who.
And I think that if they'd cast, it's difficult to say another actor or an actor, I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not saying that Peter Kay is not a good actor.
No.
But he is an actor first and foremost.
He is not an actor, yeah.
He has his moments in things that he's done.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Phoenix Knights, and I think he has been funny in the past. But I think the problem is casting Peter Kay kind of sends up the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it becomes a parody.
Yes.
Of itself, of Doctor Who.
And
I think that's where it starts to fall apart. It's like it's kind of gone, all right, this is daft. Send Peter Kay in and let's just get over
this
with.
This is the silly episode. We'll cast some silly name. And it does, it literally becomes the thing that Ricky Gervais parodies in Extras, mm-hmm. you know, when he's playing the whatever he is,
Mestor.
It's that, and it's like, ooh, why? You know, I'm not saying that it would have been any better with another actor in it, but you just see and go, oh yeah, it's Peter Kay.
I think the trouble is, okay, so it was obviously the Absorbaloff. We'll talk about the Absorbaloff as well. We'll kind of tie it into one. Was obviously designed by a kid who won a Blue Peter competition.
Yep.
Which I entered.
Yes, I think I did as well.
And I can't remember what mine was.
No,
but it was
me.
Probably a bit of a rip-off of several different things. I think it spat acid out of its paws or something.
Oh, nice.
Weird like that. But
too expensive for Doctor Who.
Far too expensive for Doctor Who. What we can do is we can get Peter Kay in a fat suit and paint him green. And give him a weird tuft of hair.
Give him
a mohawk.
Right down his back.
It's great.
To his ass.
It's kind of
right down to his ass crack.
It goes right down to his ass crack. So it's
not a pair. That's not a little pair of underpants he's wearing. That's just.
Are those his pubes? I thought it was a loincloth, but it probably links up, doesn't it? It goes down to the bottom and comes on like a utility belt. It's a Doctor Who spoof outfit.
It's what
French and Saunders would have dressed up as when they did their Doctor Who, you know, piss take.
I think when you see the original design that the boy drew, it's really good. Mm. And I think in the original design, he's meant to be as tall as a double-decker bus.
I'm sure.
And then you've got Peter Kay. Oh, what a come down.
Doing that a lot. He's got a thing, at least. He has realised Doctor Who monsters have to be a bit monstery.
Yeah, I gotta say, he is better when he's the monster. He does it actually really quite. He is grotesque.
Yeah.
The
Absorbaloff. The
Absorbaloff, yeah. He is horrible. And I was watching it, and like the moment when he grabs, what's her job?
Ursula.
And she sort of screams, and he's sort of there snarling.
Untouched. That's all it takes.
Yeah, and he's doing the whole, you know, he's been a bit of a sill. that I was like, actually, I think a kid would find that pretty frightening. Like, if I showed my nephews that, well, yeah. especially one of them, who's a right fucking babby ass, right. he would shit himself.
Well, that whole sequence is pretty horrific.
It is horrible.
Like, her
really?
Face pushing through that.
Yeah, and I
turned around to Stella, and she was watching. She occasionally would peer over her shoulder at this one, and she kind of was like, oh my God. And it was, yeah, actually, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty grim, getting trapped inside Peter Kay.
especially if you're in his arse. Like, bliss.
Yeah, absolutely. She
bless
got...
Bliss.
Bless Bliss. She's getting the full load there, isn't she? She's getting the arse crack sweat and the farts and the poo.
Oh.
She's getting everything.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, imagine that.
That's going a fate the, worse than
going
death.
Going to the toilet. She's yeah. just looking straight down the
staring
pan.
Staring into the pan. Would you rather take Bliss or what happens to Ursula at the end? And you're going out
what,
without them.
What, become a bloody sex aid?
Yeah.
I don't know.
God, I'd probably take the absorber off.
Yeah.
At least Peter Kay could, you know... Garlic bread. chuck a couple of them out. Yeah, where you know, so it has that kind of dip. I think when they have the band practice and it gets a little bit silly burgers, and then you know, all right, let's turn it down a little bit, and then Peter Kay turns up, and for a while it kind of putters along fine, and then I suddenly remembered bits like, oh yeah, then he kind of puts them to work, and they're out there trying to find the
Torchwood
doctor.
Files.
The Torchwood Files, and he mentions the. Bad wolf virus or something. Yeah, and does all that kind of stuff. And then you have the Jackie plot, which is really great.
Yeah.
Really fantastic. And I really love that whole sequence and, you know, how are you supposed to find this one teenager in London?
Yes, and it's like, oh,
the Tylers!
Yeah. Jackie Tylers!
That's great, because it makes it all...
Is that Super Gran? Is that the
yeah,
Super
it
Gran
is.
Actress?
Yeah. That's all fab. And Jackie... sort of finding out at the end that he's trying to get close to her because of Rose. And I thought it was a really touching little scene,
it's
actually.
It's really quite poignant, isn't it, that moment? She does that very well, and you think, oh, man. You know, horrible for him because he's like, oh, shit, yeah, I really have taken advantage of this woman.
Yeah.
She sells it. She's a good actress, Camilla
really
Dory.
Good.
She should have been in more stuff because she's fantastic in doing the comedy stuff, but when it needs to hit home with emotional... things. She's
even when
good.
She was just sat by the phone,
yeah,
and that was my daughter, and you just go like, oh wow, you know, and you feel like how good it was for her to talk to her, and then also
like
how lonely she certainly is.
She's gone from being like this comedic milf to a bloody, you know, she's an actual mother.
Yeah,
that is,
of course,
you know,
of
really
course.
Worried about her.
But I think it was really lovely to have that time with Jackie because you don't really get a chance to see Jackie just doing her thing when she's not about to get picked up in the TARDIS, when she's just, you know, going down to the laundrette or whatever, or going down the pub for a quiz night. It was really cool, and it kind of brought it all to life again, I think.
Yeah, and interesting that she sort of says, you know, I'll protect both of them.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's a nice bit of character development. Yeah. Because obviously, you know, in series one, she really can't stand the Doctor.
No, and the whole setup, she's not really fond of.
As soon as he gets younger and he's a bit more dishy,
she's well up for it. I tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. And especially after she thinks we might have two dicks.
Oh, she does, doesn't she?
She does, yeah.
And her eyes roll into the back of her head, and she faints, and it's just
Jackie likes a bit of DP.
Jackie, fucking hell. Right. So let's talk about the Absorbaloff.
Yeah.
So is it the cardinal sin of Doctor Who monsters? This versus the Murker from 2 weeks ago.
Well, I mean, this actually looks convincing.
Mm-hmm.
The Murker doesn't look convincing in the slightest.
No.
It's just shapes.
I think they're as bad as each other, but they're just... I think...
I mean, it's crap.
There's obviously the technical differences. Like, obviously, the prosthetics. There are prosthetics.
Yes.
I just think that they're both equal. I'd put them in the same, like, tier of crap. But, like, you know, I don't think it's necessarily that one is more technically sound than the other.
No.
I just think nobody's thought about it.
Yeah.
Nobody's thought about the way, much like with Murker, it's going to get lit. It's going to get shot.
Yeah. Yeah, because you've got that, like, running in the alleyway in
running
broad
around
daylight. And it
industrial
is just
estates.
Peter Kay, who's obviously, you know, he's a big bloke. And he's in a cumbersome costume. And you just say, oh, you know, they've like sped it up a little bit, a bit Benny Hill music.
It's when he gets up from his seat and, yeah, you know, he like kind of...
Yeah, he climbs over the table.
Everything's played in fast forward. Yeah. And it's, yeah. I think they're both up there for that reason. Yeah. I think it's just... I noticed going straight to Blink, I was like, oh my God, this has atmosphere.
Yes.
And there's no atmosphere in again, you know, it's the same thing that we kind of pointed at War is the Deep for.
Yeah.
Is that this just doesn't have any atmosphere. Yeah. It's all very bright. It's all very, yes, it's all very kitchen sink and, yeah, you know, all very safe visually. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. No. But I guess equally, they're still doing the whole in-camera conversation
thing. They're trying to do something else with it and, you know, yeah. It was a nice week off for David and Billy.
It was. I'm glad they. I'm glad they had fun.
Filming other bits for other stories.
I'm glad they had fun. Something I'm a little bit confused about.
Right.
Elton's mum.
Yeah.
So when we see the flashback of him seeing the doctor in his house,
yes,
he looks up. David Tennant, you know, scowls at him, and then that's it. When you see it again, David Tennant scowls at this small child. Then the camera pans away and his, yeah, mum's dead on the floor because, yeah, some shadow killed her that he wasn't able to stop in time.
Fashion Narada prototype.
Let's go for it. So was it a repressed memory that his mum,
yeah, maybe,
died?
I think it must have been, because otherwise you'd remember she was dead.
That
I don't
seems
know,
like
weird.
such a like for the doctor to be the thing that you remember from that encounter.
Maybe
maybe
the doctor did the old bzz on his head.
Maybe.
And it didn't quite work. He still remembered a man in a brown suit in his front room.
Wow. I mean, that's kind of sick.
That's pretty sick.
You know? Mm. Wow. The doctor's an awful person.
He is, yeah. I was reading, there was a good thread on Twitter the other day, and someone said, I'm annoyed. So someone was like, it was an older fan.
Mm.
And I sort of agreed. It was like, oh, I'm annoyed with bloody new Doctor Who and people idolising the Doctor. Like, oh, be more like the Doctor. The Doctor's a tosspot.
Wig has the capacity to be, yeah,
you know,
an
he's
arsehole.
Not really. He was never really created to be the person that you, the hero that you look up to. He's always been a bit of,
yeah,
the lines are a bit blurred. Yeah, you know? If he has to kill someone, well, I guess I'll have to do it. But,
yeah,
you know, I might make a joke about it afterwards, yeah, and pretend it's all fine. You know, and if you know one of my young teenage companions gets crushed in a bloody,
yeah,
explosion on a freighter into Earth, well, bollocks.
Which is why, you know, the whole bit at the end when he's going to absorb Elton and he's like, it's all right, do it. It's fine.
Yeah, it's like, man.
It's not going to happen, is
no.
it? Come on.
Yeah.
You know, don't play us like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I suppose you have to have a little bit of tension because Peter Kay's freezing and
he's probably the warmest one there.
He probably is, actually, surrounded by latex. But yeah. Oh, El Divo reference.
Yeah, El Divo.
That
was
like, brilliant.
I was like, oh yeah, I remember that.
The last little note I've got here.
It always
here,
makes me fancy a pizza, that episode. Every time when he says, like, oh, I'll go down for a pizza, and he comes back with a pizza, I'm like, oh.
Elton's night in that he describes he's going to have with Jackie is my dream, is my perfect night in.
Yeah.
Get the telly up really loud, order a pizza in, and just have a laugh. That's...
Shank milk jewelry.
So the last thing I wanted to say, which I think is really funny, I think people should go back and have a look at this, is that Ursula's got her glasses on when she gets absorbed by the Absorbaloff.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was, Stella pointed out, and I'd never really noticed before, but obviously her glasses go like into his skin,
yeah,
still.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just thought, does it not look a little bit too daft with her glasses on, sticking out the side of it?
Yeah, I thought that's all right. That's never really...
I don't know. Maybe because they're still bright red and the rest of hers turned green.
Maybe.
I thought it looked a bit weird, but I thought
it's well done, Matt. I think the actual costume and everything, they did a really good job.
With their faces moulded into the side of it. Yeah.
Like obviously when they do the close-ups, you know, they've obviously said, right, we're going to put this stuff over your head.
Exactly.
Like a bit of 2-foot board with like green goo on it.
If you can stay in the profession after having to do that.
Yeah.
Then... It's your vocation. It's your thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's talk. Oh, that incidentally came 220th out of 241st.
220th.
Yeah.
Okay.
So pretty. I mean, yeah, it's the lowest ranked David Tennant story.
Yeah, and this is why I was quite excited to talk about this story and Blink, because it's like we haven't really done much David Tennant stuff.
We haven't. I think because generally we've kind of been a bit sniffy. It's kind of, yeah, a period of the show where we're like, yeah, we don't like the Tenth Doctor, so
yeah,
don't really want to watch that. What did we think of him in this?
I mean, I've got more of an opinion of him in Blink. because okay. he's in it more.
Yeah.
I mean, in this, he just turns up, doesn't he, really?
Yeah.
He's just there.
But he's, you know, that's the 10th Doctor. You get like a little distilled shot of the 10th Doctor. Mm. What's he like? What's it, you know, what was the 10th Doctor like in Love and Monsters?
Well, I don't know. He's a bit of an arsehole, wasn't he, really?
Yeah.
I mean, he left a little boy to just be like, oh, well, your mum's dead, but deal with it. Deal with it, chump.
It's the thing, I just, you know, he's brilliant and he's cool and he's, you know, perfect and all that kind of stuff.
He's got a long swishy coat.
He's got a long swishy coat and spiky hair, you know, and he talks a bit funny and stuff. He pulls some faces and does weird stuff with his voice and all that kind of stuff. But that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I like David Tennant. I think he's a fantastic actor.
Superb.
Undoubtedly a superb actor. But yeah, the 10th Doctor just doesn't do it for me.
No, I know what you mean.
I'd probably take him over the 5th Doctor though.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Is that bad? Is that like...
Oh, actually, no. Would I? I don't know.
This is like a central
kind sure, of like
problem, isn't it?
Would I take... I mean, they're both arseholes, aren't they, really? The 5th Doctor's a bit of an arsehole.
He never looks like he can just like... Let's have a coffee, mate. Sit down. Just stop going. Stop pacing and worrying about things and all that kind of stuff. Just sit down and just have a chill moment.
I don't know. I think if I was traveling with the 10th Doctor, he would get on my tits.
I think that's true as well.
Would be less likely to get on my nerves.
Because the first thing I thought when I said that bit at the end there was David Tennant in a bloody sombrero with
and all that stuff.
Flowers around his shoulders. And I just thought,
around.
Nah, I can't do that.
Doing Ghostbusters with Billy Piper and all that. That would be just like, oh no, sorry Doc, I don't care what planet we land on next.
Yeah.
I'm getting off. I'll get the bus home.
On the planet of Blazing Infernos, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'd still take him over the 5th Doctor.
Really? Oh no, actually, I'd stay with Peter.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd stay with Peter.
Fair play.
Yeah.
There we go.
No, that's that.
That's where we stand on that matter.
Let's talk about getting sucked off by a paving slab.
Okay.
We haven't discussed
getting a chumbly from a paving slab.
Getting a chumbly from a paving slab.
She's
dear.
Got yeah. I mean,
is that?
It's rough.
It is rough. Is that probably the worst thing the 10th Doctor ever did, or the Doctor in general?
Commit
a woman to being...
To a lifetime of being a sex aid.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
We got a load of 10 gags in the office. For those of you who don't know what that is, Google it.
The box of... Naughty things.
Naughty things.
Yeah.
She is basically one of those.
She kind of is.
But it just doesn't have a face.
She is a human fleshlight.
She is a human fleshlight, yeah.
Made out of...
Concrete. Ouch.
Oh, I mean, there's got to be someone out there that's perfect for them.
Oh, dear.
Ow. I tell you what, it's kind of sickly dark, though, at the end of the story to get something like that. Because Stella said at the end, well, yeah, it was great, but like, she didn't say it was great. She didn't say that at all. She said, the woman who got turned into a paving slab didn't really get her story resolved at all. And I was like, what do you mean? She said, well, she's just like that forever now. And I was like, yeah. And she was like, oh, seems a bit like something we need to talk about, though, doesn't it? And...
Oh, don't say that, Stella, because Big Finish will be like, right.
I know, I know.
Of a paving slab.
Oh, my God. Well,
it hasn't happened yet.
They do it. But, like, it's so difficult. Because part of me kind of feels as well that it's a bit of a sick joke that it kind of leaves you with that bittersweet kind of thing. You get with Doctor Who episodes where things are kind of darkly messed up at the end and like...
Yeah.
It's kind of like a bit sick, isn't it? Like, not the what he's doing to her, but like the fact that she's like that forever and that's due to an encounter with the Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? She needs another support group. She probably needs several at the moment, but... Yeah.
You know, and she's going to, you know, when he dies.
Yeah.
That's it. But I mean, like, what's her lifespan? Like, is she still going to age?
She mentioned her lifespan. She said she's never going to age.
Oh, did she? Oh,
yeah.
Shit, yeah. So that's it.
Yeah.
It's like at the end of the world, there's just this poor paving slab. Full of cum.
Yeah. There we go. Excellent. He's done it. He's done it, everybody.
I got it in.
There we are. No, let's not.
Hello and welcome to the Eurogamer Newscast. And this week we're discussing the biggest Xbox leak in history. We're looking ahead to the Switch 2's potential launch lineup. We're asking why there are so many industry layoffs. Or at least that's what I would be saying. If you're listening to the Eurogamer Newscast, hello, I'm Tom, Eurogamer's editor and host of our weekly discussion podcast, where we break down the biggest gaming news stories and share insight from our news reporting team. Head to your favorite podcast app now to listen. Just search Eurogamer Newscast.
Let's talk about Blink.
Blink.
The second highest rated Doctor Who story in the 2014 DWM poll.
Is it the second rated?
It's number two.
Wow.
Just below the Caves of Androzani.
Right.
Oh, no, not the Caves of Androzani. What's first? Day of the Doctor's first, isn't
it? Day of the Doctor's first.
Day of the Doctor's first, then Blink, then Genesis.
Oh.
Then Caves.
Then Caves, okay.
The City of Death, Talons, Empty Child, Pyramids, Human Nature, Remembrance.
I mean, that's wrong. Blink is not the best Doctor Who story.
The second best.
The second best Doctor Who story. I mean, yeah, it's not the, yeah, it's not.
Okay.
Doctor Who isn't even in it very much.
No. But it could still be so good that it's the second best, even if the Doctor's not in it.
Nah.
No?
Yeah, not having it.
Right.
What would you say? Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't say it's the second best Doctor Who story of all time, no.
All the best?
All the best, no. I wouldn't say it's the best.
Is it in your top 10?
No.
No, it's normally.
But what can you say about it, really? It's everything that has ever been said about Blink, or ever will ever be said about Blink, has already been said.
Well, this is the thing. So, obviously watching Love and Monsters, I went into Love and Monsters thinking, oh God, I've got to watch Love and Monsters. I felt the same way about watching Blink.
I kind of had the same thing as well,
And I will say, because I know some people have said, or we probably were the same with Warriors of the Deep. I actually went into Warriors of the Deep, sound of mind,
me
thinking,
too.
I haven't watched this in yonks, let's give it a go. I've got some Silurians sat on the shelf before anybody else, so I'm up for it.
I had the same sort of thing with a little bit of a, it's four parts long. At least with these, I don't feel that kind of,
yeah.
It's only 45 minutes, so what?
You can just get, I literally watched it before I started work.
Yeah.
Eating my breakfast.
Yeah.
And I went into it thinking, oh, Blink. Because I think it's one of those stories that because people go on about how brilliant it is and, you know, oh, it's the best one ever, you do sort of think, but it isn't. So, you know, that sort of weighs it down. I came out of it and I really, really enjoyed it.
Brilliant.
I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. I also came out of it thinking Village of Angels is better.
Mm.
Village of the Angels is better than Blink. Because the Doctor is in it and more central to it. It is more of a Doctor Who story. This, much like Love and Monsters, is Doctor Who spin-off.
I suppose that it depends how you would classify an episode of Doctor Who, though, because, like, just because it's Doctor Light, I don't think, just because the Doctor isn't in it as much, doesn't make it any less Doctor Who-y.
No, not at all.
I think it definitely helps having the Doctor all the way through, but really, it's the elements of, well, is it the fact that it's scary?
Yeah.
Is it the fact that there's obviously elements of time travel and paradoxes and all that kind of stuff? Because really, both of these are kind of standalone, you know, obviously Doctor Light, but without the Doctor in them, they're sort of pilots for their own shows, aren't they?
Yeah.
Really? Much like Torchwood eventually became.
Yeah.
But that never really had its pilot episode.
No.
But these kind of feel like they could be starting something up.
Yeah,
you know?
You could have. The Sally Sparrow mysteries or whatever.
So maybe that's why it feels less Doctor Who-y, because it's so doing its own thing. And it's because the Doctor isn't there to kind of...
I see
what you mean.
Yeah, but what it does do, it does very well. Mm. You know, it is scary.
Yeah.
It is genuinely scary.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it when it went out. I don't think I watched it live. I watched it on video. And I remember thinking, crikey, this is really good. Mm. Because I think when I heard, it's a Doctor Light story, it was that whole thing of like, oh, well, we had Love and Monsters last year. Mm. And, you know, is it going to be that again?
Yeah.
And it wasn't. And it was genuinely good. And I remember when, like, Jonathan didn't watch it either. And I'd watched it before and I was like, you're going to like this one. It's really good. It's really good. I don't think he's much of a fan, to be honest.
No.
But, I just, it just hits all the right spots, really.
It does. It does.
And I think when David Tennant is in it, mm-hmm. he's very, very good.
Yeah.
That sequence when he meets with the copper, when he's zapped back to 1969, mm-hmm. and he's got all that stuff about, oh, I built this thing, and, oh, you know, don't go near chickens, it's not nice when they pop, and all this.
Yeah.
I thought, you are effortlessly Doctor Who in that moment. Mm-hmm. It's like, you are Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can understand why people like you so much in that moment. Mm. There's other bits of his character that obviously I'm not so keen on. Mm. But I can see why people like him.
Do you think it's his unwavering confidence?
Yeah, I think
because he unlike other doctors, can just, maybe the fourth doctor is the only other one.
Yes.
Can just walk into a situation and just sit down and just be like, I'm in charge, bang, you know, and all the attention's on them. They command the situation.
And that was exactly what the comparison I made was to yeah. Tom, because watching season 17 at the moment, I've been saying, gosh, Tom just, you know, he's just effortlessly doing this. You know, he doesn't even need to think about
no.
it. Everything he says, you believe him. He believes what he is saying
yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So you just go with it. And I think David has got that.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you know, what I am talking about, although it's nonsense, it's not nonsense because I'm the doctor and this actually makes 100% sense. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I get why people say you're like the best Doctor Who of the new Doctor Whos.
I suppose because he handles the aspects of the character where if you're an actor and you're given like a line of dialogue, maybe now it's seen as a bit au fait and it's like, oh, it's like it's classic bit of Doctor Who dialogue
because yeah.
you know that whole you know yeah I went over there and then I met this person and then yeah and then I married them and oh let's not talk about the time that happened and,
yeah,
do you
yeah.
like bananas, that sort of thing that the Doctor does yeah. that Jodie Whittaker does they all do it but
yeah.
I think the sign of a good actor is when you're not rolling your eyes
yes.
at that stuff because
yeah.
that dialogue of yeah yeah Marie Antoinette nice person da 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 da
yeah.
one liner shame about the dildos though or whatever their
yeah.
their one liner is where it's kind of like oh Marie Antoinette's got a Game Boy you know because that's weird
yeah.
something silly like that
yeah
when an actor does it and it feels like yeah. oh that's so hokey
yeah
like compare what David Tennant does to I don't know Jodie's bit in Ghost Monument, where
yeah.
she's talking about getting those glasses
yeah.
and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. He is so good at just making that stuff just
yeah.
flow out,
yeah.
just like nothing.
And I was not going to make the Jodie comparison because that was the first thing that came into my head, but it kind of is.
Mm.
I think I've never quite really believed her. I don't believe that she believes what she's saying.
Mm.
I think that's the problem. Not always.
Mm.
But I think in some of the more techno-babbly bits or the more scatterbrained bits, I almost feel like she's thinking about
It's the quirky Doctor bits of
yeah. it. Yeah.
More so than the bits where like she has, like in Saranga Conundrum, when she's talking about that engine that powers
yeah.
the ship. That's really cool. I
yeah.
like that bit because she's really passionate and you can see her, you know, the way she emotes about it.
Yeah.
But it is more the those kind of typical David Tennant Doctor Who quirky lines
yeah.
that, yeah, sometimes other actors come in and feel a bit beleaguered.
Yeah.
And like they're outstaying their welcome. You know, this is dialogue. But he just rips through it, actually.
Yeah.
I had to put the subtitles on for that bit because he's very, you know, very quick with his little quips.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, the bits where he's talking through the DVD player.
All very good.
He's so commanding
yeah.
and he's so reassuring, even in that last
yeah.
moment where he's, you know, telling them not to blink.
Yeah.
He's so, you know, like, yeah.
He has that Tom Baker thing of he's kind of got a scariness to him at times.
Mm.
And you sort of think.
You can switch it on.
Yeah, you know, you sort of think, oh, shit.
Mm.
You know, and Tom was obviously very good at that. But of course, David, you know, unashamedly sort of pinched quite a bit of Tom in his performance.
But you can't not when you're Doctor Who,
But
though.
You can't not when you're Doctor Who.
Just
especially when you're a Doctor Who a fan of his age who grew up with Tom
exactly.
and then Peter.
And you can't... It's a crazy thing to suggest. You can't really do Doctor Who now without ripping off David Tennant.
That's the other weird thing, isn't it?
Mm.
That's kind of crazy.
That's probably why people draw so many comparisons.
Between
them. I mean, maybe it's because Jodie's being written like the 10th Doctor.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, like, he's just so good with it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody just does a David Tennant parody now.
Yeah.
Just like people used to just do Tom Baker parodies. Yeah. Just, you know.
Yeah. I guess why Tom's so good with that is because, you know, he talks mad nonsense.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah. You know, he's just effortless True. At doing that sort of stuff. You just believe anything he says.
Would you like to know what the number one movie at the time Blink came out was?
That's 2007.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
Don't think I've ever seen that.
No, me neither. Number one single, though, Rihanna, Umbrella.
Ugh.
Oh, it's a... Oh, come on. That's probably one of the better ones that we've had.
Is it?
It's better than that Yazoo cover from The Weeping...
Oh, yeah, like, true.
Warriors of the Deep. The Weeping Angels.
Yeah.
They are an absolute stroke of genius.
They really are. And I must say, because I know obviously on this podcast, you have got a bit of a reputation for bashing Stephen Moffat.
Yeah.
And when I was writing my notes, all I kept putting was, this is so clever.
Yeah.
This is so clever. You understand immediately why he was given the job of showrunner.
Yeah.
Like, he came out of this, he won so many awards because it was just fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
So cleverly written.
Yeah.
There is no universe where the BBC would not have gone,
him.
Give that man Doctor Who.
Do you think it's because it doesn't feel like Doctor Who? Do you think it's because...
Yeah,
because
there's like lots of sitcom-y moments which feel like coupling, like all that stuff when he's like, oh, I'm in your kitchen. Yeah, look out for my brother, he's got his cock out. Don't blink. I was winking at me. Don't blink at that. You know.
There you go. I think it's the sitcom elements, definitely. But I also think it's because it's doing like sci-fi, but it's doing quite highbrow sci-fi.
The paradoxical stuff.
Yeah. And it works.
It works, and you know, Doctor Who hadn't really done that, had it? To be honest,
not so dramatically.
No,
I don't think, and certainly to push the main character of the Doctor out of the story.
Yeah.
To kind of make room for all that stuff, because you need a lot of stuff explaining to you, but it all makes sense, and it all ties up really nicely.
Yeah.
Maybe should he just stuck to doing 45-minute episodes?
I do think that. Stephen works better as a writer under somebody else, not as the showrunner.
Mm.
I mean, actually, to say that, he did a really good job with Series 5. I really like Series 5.
Yeah. The launch of his Doctor Who was brilliant. I think we said before, like, it's, you know, people forget, I think, how good
it was.
It was when it relaunched.
You know, I've got as much nostalgia for that as, you know, the rest of T. Davies stuff.
Exactly.
It's a shame, really, because that was so strong. And then literally a year later with Series 6, my interest teetered off instantly. And I was more interested in Tortured. I was like, I'm enjoying this more.
Yeah,
But yeah, he's just very clever. Like, one of the bits that really stuck in my mind was the stuff with the DVDs.
Mm.
And she has that conversation very briefly with the doctor on the telly in the shop. And she's like, well, this is weird.
Yeah.
How can you hear me? And he's like, well, I can hear you. And then when we revisit the tapes later on, her side of the conversation is different, but it still fits with us being said. And I was like, God, how do you even write that? How do you sit down and think, well, hang on a minute.
Well, it must be, you think of the idea, the doctor has a transcript of a conversation. So I've got to write that scene first and then... So that must have come first in the writing of it all. Because it's really smart.
It's very smart.
Really smart.
Yeah.
Do you think that the use of DVDs and especially Easter eggs sort of immediately dates this, though?
As soon as she said something about the DVD shop, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
This feels old immediately.
It was and we've all been in millions of those DVD shops. Usually they've got, you know, they've got PS2 games over there, a couple of stolen hi-fis over there.
Yeah.
I was basically thinking cash converters.
Yeah.
A couple of bongs up behind the window, you know, and then you've got the back where nefarious things happen and lots of takeaway pizzas are stacked up and you know, all that kind of stuff. There's a mattress
and like,
in the
corner. The guy on the counter, he is like something from space, isn't he?
The whole bit
is like something from space.
He is. He used to go by the stage name Ray Peacock. I forget his name now, but he does the Parapod, which is a really great podcast. They did a movie. But he's very, very good.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I forget his name. Ian Boldsworth, that's his name. He's a stand-up comic.
Fair
enough. Good.
I didn't know that.
And then you get the explanation of what a DVD Easter egg is, and you must have been thinking when the scripts are coming in, thought, let's save a spot on the disc so people can you know, left click off the menu. Yeah, and you can, and they're on the DVDs, aren't they? The full David Tennant things.
Like
I think because they definitely included for that series him talking about the House Martins, that band that he went to see.
Right.
And do you not know that bit?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really?
Oh wait, is this when he's talking to Martha?
Yeah, on the video.
And then the Pears business.
Don't know if anybody remembers the House Martins, but they're a really good band. Right. He starts going off and off and about that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm fairly certain that's on the DVD.
That's on the DVD. Okay, that's cool. DVD.
But then him talking about, yeah, we're on the forums and we're having discussions about it and stuff. And I think that might be a political reference and stuff. It's all stuff that happens, you know.
It's Doctor Who fans again.
Yeah.
It's Doctor Who fans because obviously every Doctor Who fan of an age watching that will go, oh yeah, Easter eggs. I know what an Easter egg is. You know, Joe Public, who owned DVDs, maybe not know what an Easter egg is necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, if you're a sad nerd like us, where we watch stuff like Doctor Who and Red Dwarf, littered with Easter eggs.
True.
You know what an Easter egg is.
Oh my God, the Easter eggs on Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
Should we talk about our favourite Easter eggs ever? I think there's probably some...
I don't know if I've got a favourite Easter egg.
I think there's a... I mean, I love the Jamaican stuff on the Earthshock DVD. That's really funny. There's one I remember... somebody telling me about years ago, it was on a PlayStation 1 or 2 demo disc.
Right.
That a couple of them got shipped out with this really horrible, like, Japanese body horror, like, underground movie.
What the hell?
And some of them, and, you know, there's kids clicking on and going like, oh, the new SSX is coming out. Let's have a look at the concept art from it on their PlayStation 2s. And this, like...
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty grim.
Yeah. Is that the doctor? Did he do that?
No. That's super, super fucked up.
That's the master.
The master goes onto the gaming demo discs.
Sacha Dhawan, he's stuck on Earth for all those years. He's like, oh, I feel like doing something naughty.
I'm going to get into Sony Pictures and Sony Entertainment in Japan, and I'm going to start getting all this horror movie stuff onto discs. But I think it does kind of date the story a little bit.
It does a little bit,
because,
yeah.
You know, at some point, unbelievably, kids are going to ask, What's that?
Yeah.
What's a DVD? That's a bit scary.
Oh.
And then what's an Easter egg?
What's an Easter egg?
Well, you put the disc in and then you wait for the disc to load up. And then once it had loaded up, you'd go onto a screen and you'd press left and then it would show you something you didn't know was there.
Like, what the fuck?
And it was usually like 30 seconds of like mute studio footage. Or a studio clock, indeed, yeah. I know what you mean about watching it and kind of dreading it a bit, though, because it looms large in its own legend, the story. And I it's a difficult story to review because it's got so many accolades and it's had so many things, you know, praise, you know, leaps upon it and stuff. And it's difficult to talk about it without all that stuff in mind. Because it's a great bit of television.
It's a superb bit of television. I think that's the thing, isn't it? That was one of the key things. Just watching it, I mean, obviously you end up having like a fantastic movie star actress in it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Carey Mulligan, who's fantastic in it, you know, the companion that we never got.
We never got, yeah.
Because she was like, Doctor Who fans, no thank you.
Yeah.
Which I love.
You were absolutely the right thing to
do. That is the best story ever when she was like, oh, I thought... Doctor Who fans.
No.
Not for me.
No.
Mucky.
Fair enough. Some people haven't heard, he heeded that warning in the past.
Yeah. So, brilliant. I love it. But there was just something about it.
Everybody's firing on all cylinders is something that I kind of thought of.
The way it's shot, the score, just the whole production. And I was watching, I was like, Doctor Who doesn't really feel like this anymore. I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a massive decade apart or whatever, over a decade. But there's just something about it. And I was like,
do you think
it could be nostalgia, but
it could. I think that might be part of it.
Yeah.
Because,
you know, I would have been what, 14, 15 watching this.
I think it's the prestige of it. I think that Doctor Who is still they still try and make Doctor Who to that same prestigious sort of, you know, when you say Doctor Who, the weight behind it you feel is stuff like Blink.
Yeah.
You know, that was an impressive bit of TV. Yeah. That was an episode of Doctor Who that people who don't like Doctor Who would have gone, that was exceptionally good.
Yeah.
And you don't really get, maybe you just don't get stories like that anymore.
No.
Maybe you just don't tend to get stories like Blink that allow you to kind of push the boundaries. But at the same time, 11 Monsters did the same thing, and it kind of went in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
It kind of, rather than being something that people would leap praise upon.
Yeah, you know,
they're both doing different things.
Yeah, Stephen obviously was like, right, I'm going to do something that's going to scare the shit out of people and put a through line of comedy through it.
But they're both taking risks.
Yeah.
And I think arguably, 11 Monsters takes more risks than
Definitely.
Blink.
Definitely.
And I think that makes it, that's commendable.
It is commendable. Yeah, that is true, actually. I will give you that. That is very true.
But you know, it is more of a straight Doctor Who story.
Yes.
And I think that's probably why most people think of it so highly.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, like you said, the Weeping Angels are genius.
Mm.
They are an incredible creation. They have stood the test of time.
They have.
You know, I think it annoys my brother when I say it, but they are up in the pantheon of classic Doctor Who. They are a classic Doctor Who monster.
When she first sees it in the garden, I thought, this is kind of like going back and watching the first Cyberman story.
Yeah.
In that kind of, well, this is our first encounter with them. Mm. So we know so little about them at this point. They're just Monster of the Week.
Yes.
And now they've gone on to have such an impact in the series. And, you know, I don't even think that's down to how many times they've returned to say that they've had an impact, because they've had an impact on the kind of monsters that the show tries to gear, or had tried itself to gear towards.
Yeah.
You know, like at the end when it has the montage of all the statues out in public, was clearly like a kid's
watch.
You better watch her because you're dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, that was another thing that Stella saw and went, that's pretty
mean, really,
isn't it?
Interesting, because I watched it and I thought, I don't know if it needed that personally. Like, I get why they did it for the exact reason that you just explained.
Yeah.
Watching it now as an adult, I was a bit like, I think it feels kind of hokey.
It feels totally out of tune with the rest of it.
Yeah.
It feels like something that was added in, somebody asked them to put it in.
Yeah. But that's interesting that Sellers said that.
Yeah.
And, you know, because obviously she's seeing it from a very outside perspective.
Even enough to kind of go, you know, the point of Doctor Who is to, like, part of the point of it is to really scare kids.
Mm.
So, but then it is kind of crazy to think that the intent is to make kids go away from that, looking over their shoulder all the time and being terrified in real life, not just terrified for the 45 minutes they're in front of that screen.
And, you know,
and I think that's what makes it a really effective ending.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like the other monsters you don't need to worry about, because the Doctor's put them to bed now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think what was the edict? Paul Cornell told me once the edict from Russell was at the end of the story, everything has to go back in the box.
Mm.
But it doesn't at the end of the story, because they're still out there and they will get you. You know,
especially
it's just
your Ursula sex toy.
Indeed, yes. Exactly. Well, I mean, that is fucking weeping something. Go on, carry on.
I don't want to know about Elton's weeping angel. Thank you very much. Sorry.
Go on, you can get there.
I'm completely blindsided.
No, you can get there.
That's what she said to Elton. Oh dear, why am I doing this?
Go on.
Yes, I think with the weeping angels, you know, the Doctor doesn't really save the day.
No,
he's not. You know, because Stephen has since said about talking about, or is Doctor Who too frightening for children, all this sort of stuff. He's like, yeah, of course, you go into writing a story with the intent that you're going to scare people.
Of course,
but you have the Doctor in it, and kids know that, well, the Doctor's going to sort it all out, so the Doctor is the safety blanket. But in this story, you know, it's all sort of done on a sort of a wing and a prayer, like, well.
But I suppose he does give you advice at the end, which is reassuring.
Don't blink.
Don't blink.
Yeah.
Don't turn your back. Don't run. All that, you know, I've heard that 947 billion times in my life. And then that's why you also approach this with a little bit of like,
yeah, it's like, oh.
It's like, I've seen this scene of this guy trying not to blink 107 times.
Yeah.
And I see it on my Twitter a lot as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like, because it is such a great scene, but I don't need to see it again.
Yeah.
I've seen that scene enough time, more times than I've seen a lot of episodes of Doctor Who that
I
like.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You know,
I don't know, like, I don't like
this
one.
It's in like every montage. Oh, can you remember for series 3, that great trailer that they put together
with
all the strange creatures? That's a fantastic piece of music.
That is. And also Doctor Who Confidential with their great music montages.
Yeah.
They did one to Thanks for the Memories.
Yes.
Which is a very, very good
one.
That's
a really good one.
Oh, something I was going to mention that I completely forgot.
Yeah.
Do you remember for this series, they may have done it for the previous series, and I don't know if they did it afterwards, remember the Fear Factor they used to have on the BBC website?
Yeah.
Because for this week, I remember that it was either super, super high, and all the kids kind of, you know, wrote very short things about it, not giving too much away.
Yeah.
Or there was a thing on it saying, look, you know, we at the Fear Factor have kind of, you know, we give you these ratings every week.
Yeah.
We just want you to know that this one actually is quite actually quite frightening. So you may just want to watch it before your kids do, just to make sure that they can kind of take it. I'm
really?
Fairly certain it's, wow. It said something like that. It definitely the first half.
My God.
It was definitely like, you know, this one is actually really quite frightening and could frighten children. But I'm sure there was something else there that said, you know, maybe watch it yourself privately. And then, because my parents used to do that to me.
Did they?
They did that when I brought, from the charity shop, I brought back Craig Charles, The Log. No one's ever heard of it, right?
No.
It was like, it was A Dwarfer's Guide to Everything. He obviously did it off his own back with absolutely no relation to Rob Grant Productions. And it's him doing gags. And some of them a bit inappropriate. So mum and dad sort of listened to it of an evening on the cassette player before they gave it to me. And they also watched the first episode of Torchwood without me to make sure that I was all right to watch it. And then I watched it the next day before I went to school, or maybe it was a weekend. I can't remember. I watched it on catch up in the morning and it frightened the shit out of me.
Torchwood?
Yeah.
That bit when that weevil like bites that guy's thing. And that's so visceral.
I switched it off straight away.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember thinking like, wow, you won't get this in Doctor Who.
No. But that's it. That's the thing that freaked you out about it. Is it's like, oh no, it's Doctor Who kind of. Whoa, it so isn't.
Yeah, I think they were more. They did a lot more of that in the first series. I think in the later series, it sort of toned it down a little bit.
Yeah.
But that first series is very much like, gore.
Yeah, we're not Doctor Who.
We're not Doctor Who.
Please don't think we're Doctor Who.
You wouldn't have David Tennant shagging an alien and turning to dust.
Quite.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the game was for this week that it launched? Because they used to have a flash game every week, didn't they?
Oh, that was so good. My days at secondary school playing the Flash Doctor Who games. Everybody played those games. Even if they didn't watch Doctor Who, you can bet your ass
everybody's on the last Dalek.
Everyone was playing that Dalek game.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Because it's so good.
What a time to be alive.
Miss, it's educational. It's the BBC website. It's all right. That was good shit.
God, kids today, they're missing out.
Even then, after that, when people have played through them all, you could go... There's this thing on the BBC Sport website called TARDIS Tennis.
TARDIS Tennis.
And then you can get people
friggin'
to play.
Amazing. Does it still exist? Is it around somewhere?
It must still be around. I'm sure there's like a cached version of it somewhere.
I used to play it all the time.
I think I tried to play it on my Twitch stream once. Because what is it? The Queen, John Lennon, Elvis.
Winston Churchill.
And then there's a TARDIS that drops the players off. And then bizarre. So
that
strange.
That came out before Doctor Who came back.
It did.
Oh, and that was it. Isn't that weird to think that that was a time when Doctor Who was just this funny little thing?
I know.
This funny little thing. Oh, like, oh, remember that? Remember the TARDIS? Ooh.
And then
it's like, now it's a...
then these kind of episodes come out and it wins awards and people are like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have a scene like the auto-cue scene when they actually properly go back and forth. Mm. Sally Sparrow and the Tenth Doctor is one of the best scenes in Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's really good.
So good.
Yeah.
And it's so well, it's witty without being too distracting in that way where Stephen would have like a, oh, it's a bird kind of moment with his writing.
None of that, you know, around.
They do a slight, there was one bit where he almost took it too far where she notices that he writes in shorthand.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of a weird thing to bring up and to take the piss out of him before, but okay, anyway, you know, let's carry on.
But it was that or the size of his cock.
True, and I'd trust Stephen to talk about both of them in an equal fashion. Anything else that cropped up to mind when you were thinking about Blink?
Anything else? Well, we've got a Doctor Who alumni. We've got the actor from Planet of Evil is the old policeman.
Yes.
That's really sad.
It's a good scene.
It's a very good scene, and it's like, fancy the Doctor being like, yeah, you're only going to meet her, but when you meet her, she's gonna die.
I remember thinking it was quite emotional when I first watched it, but I didn't really get it this time around.
That's so sweet. She stays with him.
It's a good scene. It's a really that's the thing that touched me more. I think as a kid it was more they never managed to have a relationship because he seems
he's still trying it on though.
So he was still trying it on. Good for him. Good for him, Bill.
It's like, I'm in a bed already.
I love it.
I got my jammies on.
Hey, like, it's my last wish. I'm expiring soon. In fact, the doctor told me that I would go with you on top of me.
coitus. That's how I go.
I'm
actually fine.
Yeah.
I've just come in. I had a verruca that was a bit infected.
out of that bed, he's the porter. I'm so sorry. Out of that bed. You've got patients to take care of. Get out of that bed. That's a nice scene.
It was.
The angels, that scene at the end when they get surrounded by the TARDIS, that's a really iconic scene. That whole
shot
bit,
where they're around the TARDIS.
And they're shaking it.
Shot.
That's really
cool.
Yeah,
that's really cool. What a great thing, and like having it shaking on the
and
inside.
And it hides their kind of movement and the way they move. Because that's the scariest thing about them is you don't know the way they actually get from A to B. That's
There's
the thing that frightens
really
me.
There's a really good shot, which I don't think has ever been done since, where you see the shadow move across Sally and then it cuts and then
there's
it's
a couple
stuck.
Of moments where shadows move in the corridor, which is really cool.
And the Doctor, I noted it down because I thought this is really interesting given what we then get in The Time of Angels when you see the statue just go and turn its head round and it's like,
mid-dab.
Mid-dab. I have got it here. And... I've written so many notes for this story because I'm just saying how good it is. In this, the Doctor says they turn to stone when looked at, suggesting that their form isn't literally rock ladies. They turn to stone.
So they're something else. That's scary.
And that was scarier when I was so disappointed. Like I thought, we don't really know what they are. You know, we don't see what they are. What could they be like?
They're only frightening in appearance when they leap at you.
Yeah.
And they're only frightening for that split second because then, you know, they're immobile.
Yeah, and that's really good how they keep that...
Yeah.
They keep that banked up right until the moment where you need a big scare.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, they've got horrible faces
now. Yeah, exactly. You don't see that up until
that point. It would have been scary enough just having an angel going like, boom, it's there. That would have been scary.
Yeah.
But the fact that it now has a hideous gargoyle-esque face, that really just like ups the ante.
And it's just around the time as well where like jump scares are becoming a bit more prevalent in like horror movies. Way too prevalent.
And
like, games.
I can't tell you, as someone who edits game stuff, the amount of things that I have seen in games that have come out since Blink, and I've gone, Weeping Angels. That's Weeping Angels.
Well, we never got to that level when we played The Edge of Reality, but that was just about to come up with Angels.
Yeah.
And you know, that makes such a great idea for a level, for a game.
Yeah.
I think they are just so iconic now.
Yeah.
Like they are, when you see them lined up next to other Doctor Who monsters, you know, you've got the one on wheels, you've got the robot men.
Yeah.
And you've got the stone statues. It's just like a weird... You've got the potato-headed blokes.
Yeah.
they fit in with a lineup of monsters, don't they? They don't seem like... that's the new series one anymore.
Yes.
Because that's always how I viewed them. One really great new series monster, and that's them. And that's not true. There have been lots of great new series monsters.
And I think that is such a hard thing to do. I think one of the hardest things to do is to come up with a good Doctor Who monster, one that will stand the test of time. And you know, there's plenty in the new series that sort of have, like the Ood are still very well remembered.
The Ood.
And
I always think about that one from Time Heist that was really cool.
He was really good.
With the eyes and then it melted people's heads.
But I mean,
that
like
cool.
The ones that have like really stuck with the public, like I think people in the public would see a nude and be like,
Ood,
oh, that's a nude.
Weeping Angels. Maybe not anymore, but Slitheen would have at the time.
At the time, Slitheen would have been, Funny, really, because they were only in it once.
Yeah.
Well twice,
for one year.
Yeah,
properly.
But there was something about them that, you know, sort of stuck.
What else has had that kind of...
Yeah, I mean...
Even since, like, across the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like... I think more sticks out for Doctor Who fans. Like, I think we look at the Silurians as a classic Doctor Who monster.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think if you showed a person on the street a Silurian, if I got the
from 2010?
Well, from any era.
Right, okay.
You go, what's that from?
Yeah.
They'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Star Wars. Yeah.
It looks like something that'd be on a bridge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Going,
like in the cantina.
Yeah, yeah.
Having a pint of...
Especially
whatever.
The one from Warriors of the Deep.
Yeah,
it's got that kind of gormless... It's got a straw up its mouth.
The toy, I've resisted making this comparison, but it does look like a blow-up doll. Because it's got that big, like,
shocked.
Open mouth.
Yeah.
Oh, everything's about fellatio in this episode.
You know. Right. Anything else, Matthew? Otherwise, are we going to continue talking about fellatio in this episode?
Let me just check. Oh! The gag about the police box windows.
Kind of the first time that the fan base was acknowledged.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there are kind of sly in-jokes.
Yeah.
Maybe in-jokes that we haven't even recognised
picked up on,
yet.
Yeah.
But that definitely is then
having
a rip. I guess it would have been Outpost Gallifrey at the time.
Yeah, having a moan about the windows. And, I mean, they weren't wrong.
And because it became known sort of after that point, like, they must be in the forums.
Yeah.
Or, like, Stephen Moffat is on the forums. Yeah. Or Russell T. Davis is on the forums. And that was almost the first time that I started to notice fans turn from having a general chat about Doctor Who. You know, there's still, you know, dicks and stuff. People, you know, feeling that they're owed really good Doctor Who or they're owed a particular kind of Doctor Who. But when people realised they're referencing things that we talk about on forums and we talk about on message boards, was when fans started to become a bit more like, well, if you're listening to this then, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think it goes too far the other way when you have something like Sherlock, where the fandom sort of becomes a character within the programme, because that was in the third
series. To take
series.
The piss out of, to ridicule. Off.
Yeah, and it's sort of a bit like,
You like my show, don't you? You ask lots of questions about my show, don't you? How do you feel if I put you front and centre in the first episode, we come back after a massive cliffhanger, and I take the piss out of you? Would you like that, Sherlock fans? Yeah. You're still going to buy tickets to our conventions and stuff as well, aren't you?
Fat, greasy nerds. Yeah. You're all weird.
And you all ship things and you're wrong because only the artist's vision is...
Yeah.
It's all that kind of stuff, isn't it?
And it makes your skin crawl a bit. It's like...
I
think this is the thing. This is why he works better as a writer under somebody else because I imagine Russell didn't really touch much of Stephen's stuff compared to maybe other writers. Like, we know that Russell rewrote lots of scripts, much in the same way.
Everything, basically.
Yeah, you know, much in the same way Stephen did, and I guess Chris has.
Yeah. You'd hope.
You'd hope, yeah. But, yeah, I think you just need maybe someone to just sort of rein... I think they all do, really. I think you
Yeah, want, and it's not isolated to one particular individual. Like, you know, there are lots of, you know... Somebody needed there to be, you know, John, can you stop hiring so many, like... soap opera actors, you know, can we Beryl Reed does not need to be called right now. You know, somebody needed to stop him from doing that.
Yeah,
somebody needed to stop Graham Williams from maybe trying to make it so funny,
yeah,
or like trying to be so light with Doctor Who. Maybe they you know, needed to tone down the darkness with for the great, you know, with Philip Hinchcliffe,
yeah,
because he got fired basically over not being able to like tone it down.
Yeah,
so they've all got aspects to, you know, all the different people in charge of the show. I suppose Stephen just needed reining in to not
Barry Letts, he was just, he had it right. He knew the tone.
Barry, the Buddhism stuff needs to stay at home. Can you stop bringing incense into the office? It's lovely, but it's drowning out my pipe smoke.
Yeah. One thing that did stick out for me, I don't know if this stuck out for you. This is a production thing. At the end, so Carey Mulligan is doing that fantastic job when they're in the TARDIS and is dematerializing around them. It's like, always leaving us behind. That's really cool. And she's really like, you know, shit, they're coming to get us. And then it stopped and I'm like, wait, they're all looking at each other.
Yeah.
And the guy, whatever his name is, says, he tricked them. The doctor tricked them. They're never going to move again.
ADR.
It is ADR central. I was like, oh, you did not say that then.
No.
That was obviously hastily like, oh, we're not really sure people are going to get why they're not going for you.
Yeah.
So can we just...
It's interesting when you do notice something is ADR'd, because then you try to imagine what it was like without it. And you think, did I get it? Because most of the time when I hear ADR, I'm like, yeah, like all right. You know, because that has been a massive issue I've had with the Chibnall era, is that the ADR is painfully obvious.
Yes.
And often is... painfully unnecessary because I kind of got what happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the audience just needs a reminder when they look at each other because, you know, that would stop them.
Mm.
That's what's happened. Maybe that's all it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did make me think.
Yeah, it's a bit like, ooh, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I imagine a lot of people wouldn't notice it.
No.
But, you know, I think because we're telly heads and we listen out for this sad stuff.
You often wonder, why don't you just use the same mic? You can't replicate the same space.
Yeah.
Or if you think, might need to have a think about that, can you try and get them to do it while they're on set?
Yeah.
And not, I mean, I suppose it's only when you maybe lose a scene that you'd shot 3 weeks before and you're in the edit, you go, that doesn't make sense anymore. So.
Yeah, so you're like, get them back into the studio. And I guess for the actor, it's like, all right, I've got to try and get myself back into that headspace.
I've already had two jobs between the last time I shot that and this.
And, you know, it's not a very natural thing that you would say anyway because it's so explanatory. So it's kind of like, well, how do I say this? You know?
One thing I would, I'll say, comparing Love and Monsters to Blink, is I feel like you can see the money in Blink.
Yeah.
Even though it's a Dr. Light, cheaper story. Just the some of the handheld stuff in Love and Monsters was like, oh my god, it's on videotape. Like, but it's some of it looks like it's been graded, and it's all been graded, but some of it you can see the grade more.
Yeah.
There's a shot where Elton runs past the TARDIS into that building at the start.
Yeah.
And you can see the kind of sun flaring on the corner of the, and it's not like a nice flare. It's like something you get on your mobile where it kind of cuts like that diagonally across the screen. I thought, whoa. And I went, my God, Doctor Who was made on such a shoestring back then. Like, it's an industrial estate in Cardiff. I mean, I know that most Doctor Who episodes do end up on industrial estates in Cardiff, but this looks like it.
Yeah.
Hasn't even been like dressed or lit. And I think that, you know, again, there's an atmosphere to Blink that doesn't exist with Love and Monsters. But I think you can see that the money has kind of come in at this point.
Yes.
And they can make a set. Like, the Wester Drumlin stuff does look really,
really
good. And I couldn't tell if much of it was on location or in the studio.
Yeah,
a lot
of
it does appear to be in a studio.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, really good.
Yeah. And, you know, the prosthetics for the angels is very convincing.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where a lot of the times I'm like, is this a fiberglass statue, or is this a person made up?
Yeah.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Like, actually watching Village of Angels, I said something about, or the shot on the beach.
Yeah.
And I said, crikey, that poor actress.
Having to stand there
like that. And Jonathan was like, actress? I was like, yeah. And he's like, aren't they just like statues? I was like, no, they're actual people. They painted them up, they're dancers and stuff. And he's like, oh shit. He's like, I have no idea.
It's well impressive.
It's so good.
It's so cool.
So Blink is bloody good. Is it the best Doctor Who story, number two? No.
I wouldn't even say it's my favourite David Tennant story.
No. Nor me.
It's probably top 10,
but
it's not.
Yeah, it would be in the top 10, but it wouldn't be
my
favourite David Tennant story.
No.
I don't know what my favourite David Tennant story would be.
I like the Series 3 finale, and I like Waters of Mars.
Waters of Mars, I really like.
And I like 42.
Okay, Waters of Mars, I like. I like the one with the Ood, Impossible Planet, Sacred Pit. That's a really good one. Oh, Midnight is fantastic.
Midnight's great. Midnight is brilliant. Series 2 is pretty crap, though. You get a run of pretty dud stories towards the Idiot's Lantern. Then you get the two parts.
I don't mind Idiot's Lantern.
Do you not?
Yeah, I don't mind that so much.
I don't know.
I mean, it's a bit twee. And a bit like, there's that really annoying bit with Billy Piper where she like does that like exit stage left run when she like has a go at the dad. And she's like, you know, all it needed was a sound effect of like, you know, her legs freaking rolling around.
But you got that, and that you've got New Earth. In that.
New Earth is...
Yeah. The Cyberman two-parter isn't great.
I actually like that story.
Do you like the Cyberman two-parter?
I think the Cyberman two-parter, until the Stephen Moffat good one, the Mondasian ones, I think that's probably the best Cyberman story of
really?
The series. Yeah.
Interesting.
And I still think it's pretty good. It's a good thing. I think to introduce the Cybermen is pretty all right.
Yeah. I think maybe we should do a Cyberman thing next.
Yeah, we haven't. I had an update today about my Cyberman.
Did you?
Yeah, I haven't seen the pictures yet.
Have you got the pictures?
I've got pictures. Do you want to see the pictures?
Well,
people aren't going to...
We're going to look at the pictures now.
Yeah.
And maybe in a fortnight's time, you'll come back and we'll be talking about some Cyberman
stories. We'll be talking about Cybermen,
What should we do? Should we do... What's the highest ranked Cyberman story on this? Highest ranked Cyberman story. And just pure Cyberman story, not one where they kind of dip
like
in.
Like the five doctors when they turn up.
Tomb of the Cybermen.
Is the highest ranked.
And then Earthshock at 24, and then Five Doctors at 25.
Wow.
So you've got, Tomb, Earthshock, and Five Doctors all squashed together.
Gosh.
So the lowest ranked.
I'm surprised... I guess people aren't ranking Five Doctors because it's a Cyberman story, are they? They're just ranking it as a story.
I suppose so. Nightmare in Silver. No, Silver Nemesis. Yes, we get to watch Silver Nemesis.
Silver Nemesis is the lowest
ranked Cyberman story on the Doctor Who poll.
That is bullshit.
Yeah.
The Nightmare in Silver is appalling. And that awful one, the Lodger, the sequel.
Nightmare in Silver is two places above it.
What's that shit one with Corden in? With the Cybermen?
Oh, no. Had that come out at this point?
Yeah, because this is right up until Time of the Doctor.
Oh, no. What was it called?
Closing time. Is that on there?
Closing Time is 165.
That should be down. It is shit.
165 to Silver Nemesis. To Silver Nemesis's 206.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Shall we do Closing Time and Silver Nemesis then?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay.
Because we haven't done a Silver... Have we done a Silver Story yet?
We haven't done a Silver Story yet.
We haven't done a Silver Story.
And we're going back into the Matt Smith era.
And we're doing another Matt Smith.
From Series 6, isn't it? Is that Series 6?
Yeah.
So we get to talk about, as we mentioned earlier, the kind of series where you went, oof.
Ooh, yeah.
Hey.
Oh. And that's that one with that fecking awful green coat. What were they thinking?
Probably and the Stetson.
And the Stetson. Oh, God, they just didn't know what they were doing.
Well...
Who signed off on that? Well, we know who signed off on it, but, like, I guess he just had set... Do you want us to put him in this coat? Oh, fine, fuck it. I got a million stories to write here. And
I'm also writing Sherlock.
And I'm
also trying to do Tintin.
Oh, yeah, he was doing that one, didn't he?
Yeah.
Tintin.
Well, we'll come back and talk about that.
Next time.
Next time, you're going
to
get
an exciting one to do.
Double bank review of Closing Time and Silver Nemesis.
Jerry, what do you think, mate? You're up there.
Yeah, good point. Absolutely.
You can answer us later on.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for watching, ladies and gents.
Thank
you. You tell us what you thought of Love and Monsters and Blink. I want to know the people who really love Love and Monsters, the people that properly stan it, that know every line of dialogue, because there's lots of people out there who do.
Yeah,
I want to know
why you unironically like it.
I tell me why, because I really came out of it enjoying it way more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
And I got some form of an appreciation for it now, which I didn't before.
I do have an air of appreciation for it. I mean, I still wouldn't watch it by choice.
I know what you mean. I wouldn't watch it by choice. I'd be happy if that's the last time I watch it. I'd be happy. I've taken enough away to know, like, I've seen it. I get it. I know what it's trying to do. It's really not as bad as maybe I once thought, you know.
Yeah. Jonathan was very worried. He basically said to me, if you come out watching this story.
Yeah, and thinking it's good.
And thinking good. It's good. I'm disowning you.
Oh, well, I'm
and
disowned.
Like, and he's
probably got away with it.
Don't let that Billy talk you around
right.
it.
I won't. I clearly haven't. Clearly haven't. What do we think of Blink as a roundup? Is it, you know, estimations wise, do we think we've taken more away from it?
Yeah.
Watching it this time?
Yeah, certainly. I really enjoyed watching it this time.
Brilliantly directed. Hetty McDonald, I think, directed it.
And I got a funny feeling the dude who directed Love and Monsters I'd never heard of, so I'm assuming he only did that one.
Right, okay.
But yeah, she did a few, didn't she, Hetty McDonald?
Yeah.
Fantastically directed.
Really cool.
Some really good moments in that as well. I'd forgotten, like, the angels on the church outside. That's a cool
That's cool. And also, there's a bit where Sally stands up and the angel's, like, looking at her. And then as she comes past it, it covers her face up.
Yeah.
It's like all in one shot, and it's really nicely done. Nice little bit of CG, very, very sort of subtle CG.
Oh, very good. Yeah. It's up in our list that we've got so far. I mean, I've completely forgotten.
I've forgotten. Well, we'll have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, as a we'll put it on the Review of Death Twitters and Facebooks and Instagrams. You'll see Matt's list as it is at the moment, his rankings.
Yeah.
And then you'll see mine of the episodes that we've done so far.
Yeah.
And next time we'll add two more to it. I think I know what's going to be at the bottom of mine after a fortnight's time.
Yes.
I think it might be Closing Time.
I think it might be Closing Time as well.
I think I know what might be at the top as well. I think it might be Silver Nemesis.
Oh my God.
I love Silver Nemesis.
It's got some good bits.
Let's get around to that next time.
Silver Nemesis and Closing Time. Very good. Right. See you next time. Bye-bye.